Okay, we're beginning here on the bottom of Ayin Chet Amud Bet, two lines from the bottom. The Gemara here is still addressing the proposition of Rabbi Chanina, which is a shotek amunat mekat mefer afilu mikan vad yud yamim. That if an individual is shotek in order to cause some distress to his wife, then he's allowed to exercise the right of hafara not only on the day that he hears about it, but even until 10 days later. The assumption being that he is mefer the neder bilibo on that day, and his silence is because he doesn't communicate that hafara to his wife, and therefore he's allowed to exercise the ability to articulate the hafara over that period of time. So the Gemara brought a question from Rava, and the Gemara answered it. Now we have another question from Rav Chista, Meiti Rav Chista. Chomer behekeim mebehefer. There are certain things where you have chumrot with hakama versus hafara, ubehefer mebehekeim, and certain things you're more machmir by hafara than we are by hakama. So now the Braita brings examples of chomer behekeim. What are the examples of places where hakamat neder is more machmir? Shashtika mikayemet. First thing is that silence is the equivalent of acquiescence of upholding of the neder. The other hand, silence cannot be used in order to vatel the nether, in order to be made for the nether. Kiyem bilibo kayam. If he does a hakama belave, then he is successful and he's mekayim the nether. Hefer bilibo. If he does a hafara in his heart, einu mufar. Then he's not successful at creating a hafara. Kiyem einu yachol hefer. If he's mekayim the nether, then he cannot be mayfair afterwards. Hefer eni yochod kayem. And if he was made for the nether, he cannot be mikayem. So now, in terms of the brayta here, we have a number of items that are being mentioned. The first thing is that shtika works to be mikayem, and shtika does not work to be mivatel. And that is because of yom hashmiya, on the yom shamo, on the day that he hears of the nether. If he does nothing, if he is in complete passivity, inaction, then the nether will automatically go into effect, and it'll be the equivalent of him being mekayim the nether. That works for kiyum, that doesn't work for hafara. Therefore, that's a chumrah of kiyum versus hafara. The next thing that the Braita says is, kiyem libo kayam. If he does a kiyum in his heart, then that is successful. Hafara bilibo enu mufar. On the other hand, if he does hafara in his heart, that's not successful. So first of all, let's address the hafara bilibo, because that's something we already saw before. That is not so clear that hafara bilibo enu mufar. So each of the mefarshim, based on the Gemara that we saw before, because we had the Shita of Beit Hillel and Beit Shammai, who argued about whether ben b'chol, ben b'shabbat, you can do hafara b'leiv. So either you have to say that this braita is according to Beit Shammai, who says that hafara b'leiv ain't no hafara, and that would solve your problem. Or you have to argue that even according to Beit Hillel, where we saw back when they quoted this Gemara, that there was a stira within the Gemara itself as to whether hafara b'leiv works or not. Over there, the different Rishonim had different approaches to reconciling that issue, and based on how they reconcile it will have impact over here. For instance, the Ran over there says that hafara b'leiv works together with a lashon garua. You can compensate for the fact that it was only b'leiv, or you can compensate for the fact that it is a lashon garua because of the hafara b'leiv. So he says over here, you have to say it's a case where he was mefer b'libo, but he didn't say anything. As opposed to the case before, where he was mefer b'libo, and he says, t'liv achli, t'liv ishti. That's how the Ran solves the problem. It says here it's a case where he was only made for b'libo, and he made no articulation whatsoever. You remember the Rabbi Lezer Mimitz over there gave an answer that when it says there, hafar b'libo, that didn't mean literally b'libo, but more like libo of Shema, which is that he shmiel le'ozno, that he says it in an audible tone that he can hear, but no one else can hear. That's what it means, hafar b'libo. So then over here, hafara b'libo would mean that he literally did it in his heart. He did not articulate it whatsoever. It was not audible whatsoever. All right, so now, kiyem b'libo kayam, the other half of this, which is that if you do a kiyum in your heart, that it works. The Ran already asks, why does that work? Or how do we know that that works? The Braita makes a statement, but where would you ever learn that something like that from? So the Ran suggests over here that we learn it out of shtika, the Yom Shamo, Shehi Mikayemet. We see from the fact that on Yom Shamo, on the day that the Baal hears about it, if he never speaks up at that point in time, then the default status is that the nether is Kayam, that the nether goes into effect. So over there we see that the whole reason that B'Yom Shamo, it goes into effect, is that the Shtika is therefore determined to be acquiescence or determined to be approval of the nether. So you see that Shtika in general, silence in general, is deemed to be approval of the nether, or that's the default status of the nether when one is silent. Therefore, if someone actively goes ahead and engages and says that they want the nether, bilibo, they do it in their heart, then that should certainly work. If shtika, if silence works, because that would make it into the default status that it is then kayam after that Yom Shamo, then certainly if he actively does that, then certainly he has such a right to do it, and it would be kuyam immediately. So that's the logic that the Ran suggests over here. The Rabbi Akiva Eger questions this logic of the Ran, and he says that we have a principle. It's actually something that we discussed towards the end of Masechet Ketubot. We generally say things, Dvarim Shbalei Vinam Dvarim, that's only by Dvarim Sheinam Mukhachim, or Mukhachim. It's only by things that are not clear or evident through the action or situation in which you are in. The example over there at the end of the Gemara Ketubot is someone who's packing up to make Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, and then sells all his possessions because he's leaving to Eretz Yisrael, and for whatever reason, he doesn't succeed at going up to Eretz Yisrael making Aliyah. Then there we said that the transactions are unwound because it's obvious the only reason he entered or engaged in these sales was because he was planning on making Aliyah. And therefore, when the Aliyah fails, it's as if he built in a t'nai to what he did, that only if I make Aliyah will these sales go through. So that's what we said was something called Dvarim Shalev that are Muchachim. So now, over here too, the Rabbi Kiva Eger asks, listen, if someone is silent for the entire Yom Shamo, on the day, the entire day, on which he hears about it, then that silence is Muchach, that silence comes from his approval of the nether. Because here, time elapsed, an expiry time elapsed, and he didn't say anything. So that indicates from the fact that there's an elapsed time period in which he had the right to veto whatever his wife did, and he doesn't exercise that right of veto, then we can say that it's muchach, that he really wants the nether to be in place. That is not true when you're mikayim bilibo. When you're mikayim in your heart during the day, at some point you say, you know what, I just let her have it, I want her to take this nether, it's fine. In your heart you say that, it's not muchach that silence there, or that kiyum b'leiv from the outside party will not know the fact that you are mikayim b'leiv. And therefore the Rebbe Akiva Eger questions the logic behind the Ran's explanation here, that if silence works to be mikayim the nether, then certainly kiyum actively being Mikayim the Nether should also be successful at being Mikayim the Nether, because the two are different. In one case, the Shtika, it still leads to a demonstrable understanding by others that he wants the Nether, or he is approving the Nether, because you allowed a certain amount of time to elapse, an expiry to elapse. On the other hand, simply in the middle of the day, where you're Mikayim Bilibo, it's not obvious, it's not Muchach, that's what you're thinking, or that's what your silence means over here, that it means acquiescence. And therefore, the Rabbi Akiva Eger questions the Ran's logic behind this explanation. On the other hand, the other say, or a simpler explanation, is that the husband's right over here is really a right of refusal, which is that he has the right to veto the nether that was taken by his wife. So now, he can exercise that veto. If he doesn't exercise that veto right, then the nether goes into effect. So instead, if you say that he's mikayim the nether, then certainly that should work to uphold the nether, because if not exercising his right of veto or his right of refusal generates a kiyum of the nether, because that is the default or that's what's going to happen anyway, then certainly where he actually is mikayim it in his heart and doesn't choose to exercise that right of refusal, then certainly that should be Mikayim the Nether. That is based on the fact that The pasuk describes it as she'im lo heini avi ota shema isha vechrishla lo heini ota, that he didn't exercise his right of veto. That's what allows the nether to go into effect. So if he doesn't object, then the nether will go into effect without him having to do anything. So kol shekein, in a case where he actively wants it to go into effect, not just not exercising his right of veto, but he's actively asking it to go into effect, then certainly it should go into effect in that case. All right, now the last piece here, which is kiyem eni yochol hafer, hafer eni yochol kiyem. Here it's clearly not an example where one is more chamur than the other, but rather here they are parallel. They both have the same din over here, and it's brought down agav because we're discussing the contrast between hafara and hakama. So we also bring this down, which is true, that if it is mikayim the nether, he cannot be made for the nether. Over here, the Rishonim note, you can see in the Ran, Rosh note, that if he is matir the kiyum, if he goes to a chacham and is matir the kiyum that he made, then if it's on Yom Shamo, on the day that he heard about it, he will then have the ability to be made for the nether afterwards. But simply, if he is mekayim the nether, that waives his right of hafara, and he no longer can be made for the nether unless, again, he unwinds the kiyum nether. On the other hand, if he is made for the nether, if he nullifies the nether, then he doesn't have a right to be mekayim it afterwards, and here shilat chacham won't work. Because the way that a shilat chacham works is that he can undo an action that you've taken. So if one takes a nether, the chacham can unwind that and say that it was a ta'ut, it was a mistake, and unwind it. If you're making the nether, since the making is an action or an activity in which you are engaging and affirming the nether, then the chacham can say if that was a mistake, he can unwind it. And by unwinding it, then you can then have the right again to exercise your right of hafara. And then when it comes to hafara, to nether, you've wiped the nether out. You haven't done anything in the sense of created something actively so that the chacham can go and unwind it. Once you've been made for the nether doesn't exist anymore. So now if you go to the chacham and you want to be matir the hafara, basically what you're asking him to do is to take a nether for you or generate a nether, which he can't do. And so then once the hafara is in place, you cannot unwind the hafara because the hafara eliminates or wipes out the nether. So now the Gemara brings from this brayta, what is the question on Rabbi Chanina? Tani says here, Sheshtika Mikayemet, that silence is Mikayem the nether. My love, what is the case here where Shtika works? Bishutek Amanat Lamekat? It must be a case of Shtika Amanat Lamekat, the case that Rabbi Chanina was talking about, that even in that case, we still say that it's Kayam. Because the Braita makes a generic statement, which is that Shtika works by Kiyom. And it doesn't differentiate. It doesn't distinguish what type of silence was used over here. So seemingly, even a case where he was silent and he wanted to cause distress or duress to his wife, that even in that case, it would still be deemed to be a kiyum neder. Where it says, though, bishotei kamanat l'kayem, similar to the answer they gave in the previous amud. Now here, the silence was the silence of approval. So where it says, hainu kiyem bilibo, kayam, isn't that synonymous with kiyum alev? Meaning that if are silent because you want to be mikayim, isn't that the exact same thing as saying that you're mikayim believe that you want it in your heart? Ela must be bishotek stam. It must be a case where you are silent, just silent, without any thought about why you're silent. Not because you want to be mikayim it la'altar right away or immediately. You're not silent because you want to cause duress to your wife and you really mean made for the nether. But rather, here, the silence, you're just quiet, you don't say anything, you don't get involved, you don't really think about it. That type of shtiga will have no immediate impact. But then at the close of Yom Shamo, on the close of that day, because your right of veto has expired, then by definition, the nether will go into effect. So now, the other thing that needs to be discussed over here is how exactly this kiyum b'leiv works in this instance. There are two possibilities of how you could formulate how kiyum b'leiv works. You could say that kiyum b'leiv works is because we say that the kiyum here is ki'ilu it's dibur. It's as if you have spoken, it's as if you have articulated your approval of the nether, because kiyum is kidibur, and that would be one way to explain why kiyum b'leiv works. The other possibility is that the kiyum b'leiv here works not because we deem it to be like dibur, but rather because or not because here hur kedibur dami, because thoughts are like speaking, but rather because your desire for the neder to go into effect allows the default to take over here. Again, the right of the husband is to veto. The right of the husband is to refuse the neder taking place. But if he does not exercise that right, then the default status is that the neder goes into effect. And therefore, the kiyum belavior works similar to the way that shtika works, which is the lack of exercising of the right of the husband to veto the neder, in essence, allows the neder to go into effect. Now, the difference between those will be, many of the poskim point out that there's a difference in the manner in which the husband upholds the neder. If the husband upholds the neder through dibur, he actively is making the neder, I mentioned this yesterday, then he becomes the baal neder. He becomes the owner of the neder, and if he wanted to be matir the neder, then the husband would have to go to the chacham to be matir the neder. The woman is no longer the baal neder, because the husband has taken over as baal neder through his dibur, through his active hakama of the neder. On the other hand, if the husband is silent, and the neder goes into effect because he does not exercise the right veto, but simply is silent on Yom Shamo, then in that case, the neder will remain with the woman, and she will be the baal ha-neder, and the husband will not be deemed to be the baal ha-neder. So then, when you have kiyem b'libo, you can ask that question, which one of those is kiyem b'libo fall into? If you say that kiyem b'libo works because hirur k'dibur dami, then the kiyum belev of the husband is like an active hakama, it's an active approval of the neder, and then he would be the baal neder, and then he would have to go get the hatarah if he wanted to remove the neder. Now then, if we just look at hakama belev as being an extension of shtika, simply my inaction allows the neder to go into effect, or my choosing not to exercise my right of veto is what allows the neder to go into effect, then it's what we call chal min hashamayim. It happens by itself. And since it happens by itself, then the husband would not be deemed to be the baal neder. So depending on how you think kiyum alev works over here, would impact on the nature of the hakama. Is it like a real hakama or an articulated hakama? Or is it a hakama, the equivalent of shtika? Now the Gemara says, Ashkechan chomer behakeim mi behefer. The Braita gave examples where hakama is more machmir than hafara. Behefer mi behekem mi nolan. But the Braita never gave examples where hafara was more machmir than hakama, even though it stated that in the beginning that there are instances like that. So Gemara here says mi nolan. Doran says that's a lav dafka mi nolan. Mi nolan over here just simply means not what's the source for it, but rather what are the instances, what are the cases. So Amar Rav Yochanan, Nishalim ala hakeim, vein nishalim ala hefer. One can do hatarat, a neder, when it comes to hakama, is what I mentioned before. Vein nishalim ala hefer. On the other hand, when it comes to hatarat nidarim, or hatarat, reversing, that's what you did to hafara, that's not possible, because of what we discussed before, that hakama is an active stance by the baal, and therefore it can be deemed a ta'ut, or reversed by the chacham. On the other hand, hafara, which eliminates the neder, now requires the chacham to reinstate the neder, which he can't do. And therefore, there's no such thing as hatarat nidarim or hatarah yidei the chacham by the hafara. So now we don't have any clarity on the statement of Rabbi Chanina as to whether we have support for it. Now the Gemara is going to take a tract, which is going to lead to three questions brought by Amoraim, which are all going to end in a conclusion that they are problematic for Rabbi Chanina's position. The first of which is Meiti Rav Kahana. The Pasuk says, with regards to the husband's right of veto, V'im hacharesh yacharish la isha miyom el yom, v'ekim et kol nidareha, o et kol esareha asher aleha hakim otam, ke'echarish la biyom shamo. That when the husband is silent, then that creates the equivalent of v'ekim et kol nidareha, hakamat haneder. So now, Bishotek, Al menat lemekat akaduv midaver. The pasuk must be speaking about a case where he was silent, and his silence over here was because he wanted to cause distress to his wife, not because he wanted to be making the neder, but rather because he wanted to cause distress to his wife. Atal mer bishutek menat lemekat. Oh, eno ela bishutek menat lekayim. Maybe the shtika over here is not a shtika where he's trying to really be made for the neder, but he wanted to not allow his wife to see that he was matir the neder or mefer the neder. Therefore, he doesn't articulate or he doesn't do it properly. Maybe it's talking about here, shtika. He was silent because he wanted to be mekayim the neder. Where it says, you don't need that. When the pasuk says, kech rishla, harei bishotei kamanat the kayim akatu midaber. That's already talking about a case where he's silent because he wants to be mekayim the neder. Because right beforehand in that pasuk it says ve'kim et kol nedereh u'et kol asereh shel aleha hekim otam ki hecharish la. So there, that's a silence that includes a kiyum in it. Ha'mani mekayem im hecharish hecharish la isha. So then, what do I do with the earlier part of the pasuk of im hecharish hecharish la? Bishotei kamanat amekat akatu midaver. That's certainly, that must be that it's talking about shtika that comes to cause distress to his wife, but not to be mekayem the nether. Nevertheless, it's deemed to be as if he was mekayim the nether once the time expires. To yufta, that is a strong refutation of that position of Rabbi Chanina. V'lokim ha b'shotekam anat l'kayim. Why don't we say that this is a case of shotekam that came? Ha b'shotek stam. And the other case is b'shotek stam. So you have shtika, which is, he says absolutely nothing. And his saying absolutely nothing ends up with the day expiring, and that's what allows the nether to go into effect. Or, he could be silent because, believe, he really wants to be mekayim, the nether that his wife is taking. So let us say that the explanation of the two psukim of hacharesh yacharish la and of ki hacharish la, one's talking about shtika stam, and one is talking about shtika amanat lekayim. And then the Rani also points out over here that the shtika amanat kayim was used three times in this Gemara. The first two times when it meant shtika amanat kayim, it meant shtika that was silence with the intent to have the kiyum neder immediately. On the other hand, the third time it was used, which is the question that was brought by Rova, by the case of hecharish la, and it says over there, what is the meaning of hecharish la, which means shotek amanat kayim? So the Ran says over there, that's not the kayim immediately, but shtika the kayim at the end of Yom HaShmiah. And he notes, v'lo domi, hai shotekam not the kayim hocha, hainu shotekam not the kayim dila el. This is not similar to the shotekam not the kayim, like the other two times we used it beforehand, where it meant to be mekayim the neder immediately. So the Gemara says, you can't say that. Krai yitere ktive. We have numerous psukim over here that are discussing this topic. So there are two ways Rashi brings down to Lushonot Avir. There are two ways to learn that. One is just to say the same thing in the pasuk that we read before, which is Mecharesh Yacharish La, is the beginning of the pasuk Isha. Then at the end of the pasuk says Yacharish La. Then actually the word Hacharisha appears three times in the pasuk. Acharesh Yacharish, which is the double Lashon. And later on, Yacharish La, so you already have three Shtikot. So that's enough. Or the other possibility is that earlier in that parak, it says in pasuk Yubet, Veshama Isha, Vecharish la, lo hei ni ota, v'kamu kol nedareha, v'chol yisera, asher asra, nafsha yukom. So the word Vecharish la also appears earlier in that little section about the married woman. So three times it talks about being silent. Shtika. And therefore I've covered all different types of shtika. I've covered shtika stam. I've covered shtika l'manat l'mekat. And I've covered shtika l'manat l'kayim. All three of those will be successful at being mekayim the nether. So therefore, this remains a problem for the Shita of Rabbi Chanina. Now, Meitiv Rova. Rova brings another problem with this Shita of Rabbi Chanina. Now, even though we already brought it to Yufta, we brought a strong refutation of his position, the Gemara here, in a sense, is piling on because of the fact that if we ever find an answer to the question of Rav Kahana, then waiting in the wings, we have the question of Rova, which is Meitiv Rova, our Mishnah, Nadra im Chashecha. If she took the nether right before nightfall, mefer la ad shelo hashcha, then the husband has the right to be mefer the nether until nightfall. Shim lo hafar, if he was not mefer the nether, if he did not nullify the nether, b'chashcha, and went dark, and the sun set on the day, any ochal afer, he would not have the right to do afara after that point in time. Amai, why should it be that way? Havei kishotek amanat lemekat. To be no worse than the case where he's silent in order to cause distress to his wife. So if you remember when the Gemara discussed this case of Samuch LaHashecha, it's clear that that's a case Shelo LeTzorach Shabbat. It's a case where whatever the nether is not Tzorach Shabbat, because there isn't sufficient time remaining in Shabbat for you to call it something that is Tzarech Shabbat. So it's clearly Eino L'Tzarech Shabbat. Now, we said that the reason why we say you could be Mefred that Neder on Shabbat is because if we don't allow you to do the Hafra now, all will be lost. And if you wait till Motzei Shabbat, it'll already be Mikuyam because Yom Shamo would have expired and you won't be able to be Mefred the Neder. So we said, for that reason, it becomes a Tzarech Shabbat, because you're compelled, in a sense, to be made for the nether. But if you believe that when you take Farat the nether belave, and you're just holding out on it because you want to cause distress to your wife, then certainly in this case, you could say the same thing. When he hears about the nether right before sunset, and he's not made for the nether, the reason he's not made for the nether over here is because it's Shabbat. And Shabbat prevents him from doing Hafarat Nedarim when it's something like Shalot Tzarech Shabbat. So the reason he's not doing Hafarat is not because he doesn't want to. It's because he's prevented him halachically from doing it. And if that's the case, then it's clear in his lave that he really wants to do a Hafarat, but he's being blocked out because of the Lachot of Shabbat. That should be no worse than the case of Hafarat that was the Mekat, where we give him extra time afterwards. So too over here. If that's the case, why is it that you can't be made for the nether? Lavi kishol tekum, not mekat. Do you have to, again, this is another strong refutation in that position of Rabbi Chanina. And here comes the third case, Meitiv Rav Ashi. Yodei ani sheyesh nidarim. The guy says, I know there's a concept of nidarim, aval ani yodei sheyesh mefirin. But I didn't know that the Baal had the right to be Mefer the Neder. So, I knew about the Nederim, but I didn't know I had a right to be Mefer the Neder. Yafer. Once he finds out that he has the right to be Mefer, that becomes Yom Shamo. On that day, he can perform Hafarat the Neder. On the other hand, Yodeh Ani Sheyesh Mefirin. He says, I know that the Baal has the right to be Mefer Nederim. Well, any Yodeh Shezeh Neder. I didn't know that this was deemed to be a Neder. The way that the Ran says it, Shezeh Min Nederim Shabal Mefer. That this is a type of nether that the Baal has a right to be Mayfair. Or the way Rashi phrases it, or the Mephoreshi phrases it is, I didn't know that this was a nether chashuv. But tzarich levatlo. I didn't know it was such a significant nether that I needed to do hafarah by it. Or the Rosh explains over here, Shlo yadash, he pieced at the nether but davar nadur. He didn't know that the nether was a successful nether that she took, or that she actually did it in a manner that would be chal. So whatever it is that he didn't understand about the Afarah, then in this case it's a machloket, which is Rabbi Meir Omer lo yafer. Rabbi Meir says that he cannot be mefer in that case. Rachamim omim yafer. On the other hand, the Rachamim say you can be mefer. Even though he knew about Afarah, since he didn't know about the nether, or that the nether was something that was subject to his Afarah, or needed Afarah in this case, then when he does figure out this information, that becomes Yom Shamo. And that's what the Sheet of the Chachamim is. Rabbi Meir says that since he didn't take advantage of it when he had the opportunity to be Yom Shamo, even though he didn't know the halacha, that's not a sufficient reason to say that he has rights later on to be made for the nether. Vamai, why again should it not be a case of lahavik shotekam and not the mekat? Why shouldn't his silence over here again be assumed that it's done in a way that means that he doesn't really want the nether to go through? Just like Rabbi Chanina's case. And that's the case, he should be able to be Mayfair in the future. So some say this is the Shita, or this is based on the Shita of Rabbi Meir. The Meir says you can't be Mayfair in that case. In a case where you know about Hafarat Nedarim, but you didn't know that the Neder was subject to Hafarah, then you're out of luck. Well, why should you be out of luck? It's clear the reason you weren't made for the Neder is because you thought it didn't need Hafarah. So why should that be any worse than the case where he's made for the Neder and doesn't tell his wife and he's trying to cause her distress or duress? So then it should be no worse than that case, because here it's clear that you did not want the nether to go through. The only reason you weren't made for the nether is because you didn't think it was necessary. Others, like the Ran over here, suggest that the question even comes from the Shita of the Chachamim, because the Chachamim arguing Rabbi Meir, and the fact that the lack of understanding over here is considered to be as if he didn't hear it, but they agree if he did hear it, then the Shtika, then the silence in that case, would be problematic. It would be a keel. And he says, "Valkorchach lo plige rabbanan alei de Rabbi Meir." It's clear that the Chachamim don't argue on Rabbi Meir lemishum desvirlo de lo havi shmiya, because they don't deem it to be shmiya on the day when he really hears about it physically, because he didn't process on that day that he needed to do hafarah. Aval yihavi shmiya, had it been a day where he was considered to be Shmia, Modele de lo yafir, they would agree that you can't do Afara. That makes it sound like that Shtika in itself would have been sufficient. Why don't we just say that it's like Shtika Menat de Mekat? Because he really didn't want it to go through. If that's the case, then why doesn't he have a right later on to be made for the Neder? As the Ran says here in the conclusion of the Gemara, which is Tiyufta again and Rabbi Hanina, Hilkach Nachtinan, the Shotek Menat de Mekat Kistam, that silence in order to cause distress to the wife is the equivalent of stam, meaning when you're shotek and you don't have anything in mind. And you only have the right to be made for the nether on that day itself. But after that day expires, then you will not have a right to be made for the nether. And then, vishotek, amanata kayim, and someone who is silent in order to be mekayim the nether, then la'alter immediately, meaning that they want the nether to be mekuyam immediately, shuven yochol hafer, b'filu bo b'yom. That's the equivalent of a kiyom, and you're not allowed to be made for the nether at that point in time. You cannot unwind it, even on that day itself. Okay, with that, we complete the parak. Hadron alach, nara murasa. Now we move on. After we've, in a sense, established the right of the father and the husband to be made for nidarim, now we go through the process of understanding which nidarim are subject to hafara nullification. So there are two types of nidarim that we know are subject to nullification, and the Mishnah is going to discuss this in a second. One of those are nidarim of inui nefesh, and that is explicit in the pasuk, because the pasuk says that any time that there is an issue, which is la'anot nefesh, which is something that is affliction in any way, then there the husband has the right of hafara, because it says here in the pasuk kol neder v'chol shvilat yisar la'anot nefesh. So the pasuk specifies that the type of nether that the husband has a right of hafara to is la'anot nefesh. So that's number one, inui nefesh. Number two is at the end of the parashat nedarim, it says, Elo chukim, asher tzivah Hashem Moshe ben ish lishto, ben avdu bito, ben ureh beit aviyah. So the other type of nether is called ben ish lishto, something that is between a husband and a wife, which is known in the parlance of the Mishnah as beino leveina, things that deal with issues between a husband and wife. Now, in the most narrow sense, that would be talking about the intimate relationship between a husband and a wife. But we see from the Mishnah, we see from the usage in the Gemara that beino leveina has anything to do with the marital relationship of the husband and wife. Anything that affects that relationship would be deemed to be beino leveina. Now, because of that, the Ramban points out that you can understand now why this would have application not only to the husband and wife, but also has application to a father and a daughter. Because if I have a father and a daughter, you can have nidarim that are inui nefesh, where there's some sort of affliction associated with the nether. And you can also have a nether that is beino leveina, that affects their relationship. So if you talk about simply their intimate relationship and ish lishto, then there would be no reason to believe that that was true by an av and a bat. On the other hand, if you expand the definition of beino leveina, then you can understand if it's anything to do with the relationship between the husband and wife, it also would have to do with the relationship between a father and a daughter. And therefore, when the Mishnah begins, ve'elu dvarim shehu mefer, that these are the nedarim which the husband has the right to nullify, over here, the Rosh, the Ran, the Bali HaTosavot all say, this is also true of the father. It's not unique to the husband, but also true of the father. On the other hand, the Rambam, we mentioned this earlier in the Masechta a couple of times, the Rambam is of the Shita, that there's a difference between a husband and a father. When it comes to a husband, the husband is limited to La'anot Nafesh and Beino Leveina. On the other hand, when a father to his daughter, he has the right to be made for any nether that she takes. Obviously, the Rambam sees the issue of inui nefesh and beino leveina as being something more intimate or specific to the marital relationship. It's not applicable to the father and the daughter. Or, in another sense, the reasons for the hafarata nether might be different. The reason by the father or the father's right to be made for the nether of his daughter is because, in a sense, he is the guardian of his daughter. He, we'll call it in quotes, is an owner of his daughter, and through that he can exercise the right to be made for the nidarim. On the other hand, between Baal and an Isha, The woman is an independent entity. So now they're married. So since they're married, the husband has rights in his wife with regards to issues of the marriage. But in terms of issues in general, he doesn't have that right. And therefore, you would separate between nidarim that relate to the beino leveina versus nidarim that are just stam nidarim, nidarim that don't affect the marital relationship in any way or not inui nefesh. So therefore, the Rambam sees the Mishnah here being specific to a husband and wife and not true of a father and daughter. So now, the Mishnah explains, Elu nidarim shu mefer, dvarim shesh bem inui nefesh. Those include issues that are inui nefesh, that's the not nefesh that's found in the pasuk. And now the Mishnah gives examples. Emechatz v'imlo echatz. If I will bathe or not bathe. Emet kashet v'imlo et kashet. Whether I will make myself up or not make myself up. Here, most of the Rishonim, you can see it in the Ran, and others suggest that the kshot of here is the external appearance of the woman. And that whether she puts on makeup. And she takes care of her appearance or not. On the other hand, there are those, obviously the Ran, when he's saying this, is coming to counterbalance against others that say otherwise, like the Rambam, who says that when it talks about kshotir, it means anything to do with the physical appearance or upkeep of the woman. Which means that it's not only her public appearance, but even her private appearance. The varim shibitzina, that would make it uncomfortable or disgust the husband, then those would also be included in this kshot or et kshot over here. Whereas all the other Rishonim believe that when it comes to kshot, the public image that the wife is presenting, that would be something that's under the rubric of inui nefesh. And we're going to see in a second that Rabbi Yossi disagrees with that. But when it comes to areas that are mutznaim, there it would be deemed to be something that's beino leveina and not an issue of inui nefesh. I'm going to skip inui nefesh. By inui nefesh, we're going to see here in the Mishnah itself, there's a machloket, but it's something that the Gemara is going to address in tomorrow's daf, exactly why or what is the inui nefesh, and what is the machloket here between the Tanakama and Rabbi Yossi. Because now the Mishnah continues, I'm Rabbi Yossi. Ein elu nidre inui nefesh. These are not considered to be nidarim of inui nefesh. Ve'elu ein nidre inui nefesh. Let me give you an example of a nidar of inui nefesh. Amra. If she says, konam perot ha'ulam alai, she restricts herself in eating any fruits of the world, arizei yochol ha'afer. He has the right, the husband has the right to nullify such a nether. Perot medina zo alai, if she disallows the perot from a specific location, then that nether can stay in place, and the husband yavila mi medina acharet, and then he can supply her fruits from other places. Perot chenvani ze alai, if she says that I restrict myself from taking perot from this store or this storekeeper, ene yochol afer. Again, the husband can't be mayfair. Vimlo, aita parnasato ela mimenu. But if his only ability to gain credit comes from this chenvani, then he can insist or he can be made for the nether. Azer yafer, divi Rabbi Yossi. He's allowed to be made for the nether. This is the words of Rabbi Yossi. The Gemara will ask also, why does it start Amar Rabbi Yossi and then end divi Rabbi Yossi? And the Gemara will deal with all the content of this Mishnah starting in tomorrow's daf. Today we're going to deal with some of the more generic issues that are surrounding the Afarat Nidarim by the husband towards the wife. But as long as it's not impossible for him to bring, or it doesn't create an undue economic burden on the husband. Those are the two qualifications, and the Ran notes that. He says over here that when we say that she disallowed herself or wanted to take a nether to disallow the fruits from this specific vendor, then the Baal has the right to be made for it, even though he has the ability to get the payroll from another vendor, if this vendor is supplying him credit and allows him to buy on credit, because that is something that is valuable and helpful to the husband and his ability to supply and to provide for his family. And since that is the case, then he can deny his wife the right to get the payroll from the other chenvanim, because then he would lose that privilege or that right. And therefore he's allowed to be made for the nether. And that's why the Ran says that also by Medina, when she says, I won't eat fruits from this location, it has to be any location besides the location in which they're living. Because if he does that about the location they're living in, that's no better than the case where she says, I'm not going to eat from this specific storekeeper. So now, if the fruits of this location are readily available and everything's here now, she says, I'm not going to eat anything from the locale. Then he has to go outside of the locale to bring her payroll. That's already undue financial burden on the husband, and we would not demand that of him. And then if she says a specific location she won't eat from, then he can bring from other locations. That's fine, because she still eats the fruits from their current location. The same is true by the chenvani. Even though, again, he could supply for someone else, but because it creates an undue burden on him financially, or causes him to lose credit with the storekeeper, whatever the ramifications of that are, if they are significant enough, then he has a right to be made for the nether. But here in the Mishnah itself, you have a machloki between Rabbi Yossi and the Chachamim as to what is called inui nefesh, and that there is a machloki about what exactly what the definition of inui nefesh is. On the other hand, beno veina, it seems like everybody agrees, is considered to be something that they have the right to be mefer. And the Gemara says now, nidrei inui nefesh ude mefer, shein behem inui nefesh eno mefer. Is that really true? From our Mishnah, it sounds like the only right that you have to be made for a nether is something that's deemed to be inui nefesh. But if it's not inui nefesh, it's not the case. Vahatanyo, don't we have a braita that darshins the pasuk that I read to you before? Ben ish lishto ben av lebito, lamecha bal mefer nidarim shebino levena. That he's able to be made for nidarim that have to do with their marital relationship. Amrei. So the Gemara answers. Halein valein mefer. You have a right to be made for any one of those nidarim, whether it's a nether of inui nefesh or a nether beno levena. So then what's the difference? Why does our Mishnah only talk about inui nefesh? Miu. Inui nefesh mefer leolam. When it comes to inui nefesh, if he does afara, that nether is gone forever. Ava'im b'hem inui nefesh. On the other hand, if the nether that she took is not inui nefesh, but rather beno levena, then kedi'ita ta techutei. While she's still under his jurisdiction, means still married to him, have your afara. Then afara is in place. Mechi migarish la, once he divorces her, chayla la nidra. The nether goes back into effect. I mean, it's a temporary suspension of the nether until it can go into effect, which is once she is divorced, or according to Rashi, he adds in the word hitalmein, that she was widowed. In that case, then the nether will go into effect because the husband's no longer there to negate the isurim. Bidvarim shebeino the beina. If it's something that's beino the beina, she'ein ben inu nefesh, does not include inu nefesh. What we just said is all true by cases of dvarim shebeino the beina, she'ein ben inu nefesh. Aval yesh ben inu nefesh. If there is inu nefesh, lo chayla aleha nidra, then the nether never goes into effect whatsoever. So here's the distinction that the Gemara is drawing between inu nefesh and beno levena, which is inu nefesh, the hafara will be a permanent global hafara. On the other hand, the hafara by beno levena will be a temporary suspension of the nether until the husband is out of the picture. Now the Gemara asks about that. Udvarim shein ben inu nefesh ki migarish la chaylala? Is it really true that when you're dealing with things that are not inu nefesh, but beno levena, that once they get divorced, the nether goes back into effect? V'ha'atnan, don't we have a Mishnah? It's an upcoming Mishnah that we're going to see, something that we quoted also earlier. V'yokhan ha'minuri meri yafir. You're allowed to do afara, shema yigarshena, because maybe he will divorce her. V'tei asura lo, and she will be restricted to him. The case there in the Mishnah is a case where she takes a nether that can't go into effect. For instance, she restricts her masa yadayim, or hana from her masa yadayim to her husband. Now, in that case, she doesn't have a right to do that, because the husband has a shibud over the output of his wife, and the Chachamim actually enhanced his power in terms of the shibud here, so that her nether can't undo that. So the nether in itself is not going to go into effect, because she doesn't have a right to take a nether to restrict these items, because they belong, in a sense, to the husband. Nevertheless, in that Mishnah, there are a number of Tanaim that give advice. One of them is Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri, who says it's kedai for the husband here to be made for the nether, because maybe he will divorce her and then remarry her. And if he divorces her and remarries her, then the nether will go into effect and he will not have the ability to be made for the nether. So Omar Yefer Shemi Gershenim Eteh Suralo. So that says that as long as you did hafara, then the hafara will be successful at eliminating the nether, not only for the time that they're married, but even for the time after they're married. And that's why it's worth doing the hafara, because then maybe if they got remarried, it would protect him. But if you did nothing, even though the nether would not take effect now because you have a shibud, as soon as they got divorced, then the nether would go into effect, and that would be the problem. Rabbi Yochanan ben Nuri says, take care and do the hafara now, even though it's not necessary for now, because it'll protect you in the eventuality where there's a divorce and a remarriage. So where it says, Alma, ki megarishla, umeferla, mi kara avi hafara, that when he divorces her and nullifies it, mi kara avi hafara, that hafara is still in place and remains intact. So Amrei, so the Gemara now offers another alternative explanation or the difference between Inui Nefesh and Beinu L'Beinah. Halein v'alein havi hafara. Inui Nefesh and Beinu L'Beinah, that is successful hafara. Ella, nidre Inui Nefesh, mefer, ben etzmo, ben le'achirim. When it comes to the nedarim of Inui Nefesh, he has the right to eliminate the nether, not only for himself, but even for others. Ein v'hem Inui Nefesh. On the other hand, if there's no Inui Nefesh in the nether, then, la'atzmo mefer, la'chirim, eino mefer. But for himself, he's mefer, but not for others. V'hachiktoni, and that's what's meant in our Mishnah. Eilu nidarim, shu mefer ben atzmo ben achirim. Our Mishnah is giving a list of nidarim in which he has the right to be made for the nether, not only for himself, but even for others. Nidarim, shesh ben inui nefesh. Those in the example, and that's why the Mishnah begins with this, is those are the nidarim of inui nefesh. So now, as the Ran and the Balei HaTosafot, the Rosh Uriah point out, in the case where it's Inui Nefesh, and he's made for the nether, the Hafara goes into effect immediately, stops the nether from being in place during his marriage, and even after he gets divorced, or even if she marries someone else, after they're divorced, the Hafara still is intact, because by Inui Nefesh, he has the right to be made for both for himself and for Acherim. On the other hand, when it comes to Hafarat and Nether, Beino the Veina, then in that instance, the Beino Veina is suspended while they're married, but then after the termination of their marriage, the Nether will affect other people. So based on that, these Rishonim say that only if she eliminates the possibility of remarrying her original husband will the Nether go into effect. So if she's married to her original husband, the hafara is intact. If she divorces this original husband, then the nether is still suspended. It still does not take effect. Then, if she remarries her original husband, then the hafara is intact and nothing changed. If she marries someone else, once she marries someone else, that will preclude her from ever going back to the original husband or marrying the original husband, and therefore the nether will go into effect then. The hafara will stop being effective and go into effect at that point in time. So what they're suggesting is that when we say that a hafara works for him and for others, the truth is it works even after divorce. It keeps working until the original husband is completely out of the picture because he can't marry anymore. So again, in the case where she marries someone else, that would trigger that event. And therefore, effectively at that point, his hafara would then be dissolved and the nether would go back into effect. On the other hand, the Rambam believes that as soon as they divorce, the Hafara is gone and the nether goes into effect. The reason that the Rishonim don't like that explanation of the Rambam is because then you have this strange situation in which the husband is made for the nether while they're married. They get divorced. Then it goes into effect, according to the Rambam. And then they decide to remarry. And when they remarry, then the nether is batel again and is mufar again. So that goes from being mufar to intact to mufar. And we don't find such a thing where a nether can go into effect and then be batel again. Therefore, the Rishonim are looking for a single threshold at which the nether becomes into effect and will not be mufar anymore. Where's that trigger? Where's that threshold? When she gets married to a third party. Because if we triggered it by divorce, then there's a possibility that after the divorce, she would remarry the original husband and the hafara would go back into effect. Therefore, they don't like that explanation. But the Rambam, on the other hand, believes that that is the time or the threshold, which is at the time of divorce. And that would seem to me that if she remarried, if they remarried after that, that the hafara would go back into effect. Okay, we're going to stop here by the two dots on the bottom of Ayin Tet Amud Bet.